Welcome to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. Well, the University of North Carolina's Zhou Yi is a senior lecturer in Chinese. She was my teacher, or as we say, in those of us who speak Chinese or Mandarin, she was my Laoshir. And one of the most wonderful teachers that I've ever known or had. And so I've, for a long time, wanted her to meet the listeners, my listeners. And here's something about the challenge of teaching and maybe a little bit about the challenges of being both Chinese and American, having a feet in one foot in one culture and another foot in another culture. And so she has generously agreed just to come and have a talk with me. Laoshir, ni hao.
Ni hao. I feel so honored to be invited here and to talk about the, you know, what I feel about teaching Chinese in Carolina. Well, I should say there is a big change now from the year, you know, 10 years ago.
From the time you began teaching to today. Right, I would love for you to just tell us.
Yes,
what are some of the
big
differences?
Change. So when I started teaching Chinese in Carolina, there was only about 3 or 4 full-time faculty. Now we have a 10 full-time faculty in Chinese program.
Wow.
So 5 for language teaching, 5 for content courses.
This would be those who've already learned to speak and read Chinese to learn about culture or literature and things like this.
Yes. And also we didn't have any minor or major 10 years ago. Now we have a minors and majors. Major students, you know, the major is the biggest one in the department.
So how many majors would you guess there are?
Each year is different, but usually we have about like, for graduates, one student's graduate, about like 70 or 80 students, they graduate.
No, 70, not 17.
70
yes, students are majoring in Chinese.
Each
and then
year.
Another group would be taking enough courses to have minored in.
Yes, larger groups. So that's a big change. And so I'm in charge of a placement test for the Chinese program. So this year...
Now, placement test for entering the senior, the higher level courses or just for
level.
Entering courses?
For any students who learn Chinese before, either,
I see.
You know,
where to put a student who comes in and says, I've already had Chinese, mm-hmm. I don't want to take the basic course.
And then you
have a test to decide at what level they might be able to perform satisfactorily.
Right. So this year we have about close to 200 students who took a test. That means we have more students. They learn Chinese in middle school or high school. So they come to Carolina to continue their Chinese studies. So that's a big change. You know, I talk to my, department chair or manager there. I say, oh, I cannot handle so many students, you know, who took the placement test on a single day within 2 hours. It's too much for me. But anyway.
Well, what is the test like?
Different levels. You know, we need to talk to each student and decide which level he may be. Will place into.
So you do this in a conversation with them to see, you measure their capacity to have a conversation in Chinese first.
Right.
And then if they are
satisfied. Then we give their test.
Mm-hmm.
Then they will be, take a test and decide, we will decide which level they will place into.
I'm talking to my Mandarin teacher. I call her Zhou Laoshir. Uh-huh. Zhou Yi is a senior lecturer in the department of at Carolina, and so we're talking about testing young students who've had a substantial amount of Chinese and are ready to come forward. Now, I'm curious: are these, in terms of the background of these kids, are many of them coming from parents who are speaking Chinese in the home? Or are they coming out of mountain schools in North Carolina where, you know...
Half and half.
Okay.
Yeah, half and half. Even the students, the American students, they don't have any background at all. They may take online Chinese that offer here, not from Carolina.
They're in high school or
from the high school. So they had some kind of, you know, Chinese. So they're really, really want to learn Chinese in Carolina. So then that's the way we place students in each level. So big challenge for me, for the other instructors is sometimes because of the, you know, standard or curriculum in the high school or middle school, maybe it's, you know, different. Some students can speak very good Chinese, but they cannot write.
Cannot write or have probably
or
read. Maybe a problem reading.
Yes, yeah. Right. So it's hard to place them, you know, where.
Well, that, can I interrupt you to ask the question? Mm-hmm. What if a student has developed a proficiency in communicating orally in Chinese, is that mm-hmm. a good prediction that if you buckle down, you're going to be better able to manage the writing and reading mm-hmm. of Chinese than if you've got difficulty? So it's a good predictor of success if mm-hmm. you're trained, if you get the right, if you buckle down and are given the right kind of instruction in writing and
yes.
reading.
So that's why we have the two tracks. In our program, one track is for students who don't have background at all, they come to Carolina and start learning Chinese, or they are placed into the higher level. The other track, is for students who speak Chinese at home, maybe, or like these students, they can speak fine Chinese, but they cannot read or write. So they are put in one class. They learn how to read and write.
I keep interrupting you, but mm-hmm. In our class, your emphasis was so much on trying to push us to develop the conversational skills,
right.
to get into the rhythms of the language. Mm-hmm. If the students had already achieved that, then you could work on other things. You could speed them along a lot more rapidly.
Yeah, so that's we developed the program into two tracks.
These kids who've got the proficiency in speaking Chinese would be largely those with an Asian background.
Right. But increase the number of American students. They speak Chinese, but they learn how to read and write here. So they are put in this track, you know, together with the Chinese and Americans.
I guess not so much today, but in the earlier days, there would be many Chinese families where the language spoken in the home mm-hmm. Was not Mandarin. These would be immigrants from South China or places where Mandarin wasn't spoken. So you would have potential students, perhaps, who spoke their version of mm-hmm. Chinese in the home, but they more and more mm-hmm. Mandarin is now standard.
Right, because, you know, China has more influence in the world on the economy, and the Mandarin is more and more important in the world. So if the students or their children go to school, they will learn Mandarin. They may speak their dialect at home, but they know how to speak Mandarin. Mm. So most of the time, these students, they speak Mandarin at home. They have no trouble, no difficulty in speaking, but reading and writing, they have very little chance to learn at home. Or they learn a couple of words, but it won't help.
Well, this is one of your jobs, is to sort out these students and to figure out where they might where they might better go. And do you have a separate class in basic Mandarin for the Mandarin speakers mm-hmm. versus those of us who had no background in Mandarin? So there are different tracks, different, they use the same books?
Different books. Yeah,
them.
Because different focuses, you know.
And when would the tracks merge? When would they be able to come together or never?
Come together to the fourth year. After they finish the fourth year studies of Chinese, then they combine. They learn some topics like one of my topic language class is called business communication in Chinese. They are together. They learn how to use Chinese language to talk about business. So that we will combine, merge them.
This is you bring back memories of Jishir Woda Mingsa or This is my business card. What do you, what is that?
Ming pin.
Just your, what a ming pin.
Right.
Well, some of these things keep popping, but a lot of my Chinese is gone now.
Yeah. So lastly, the change. We have a more Americans, Americans, they learn Chinese before they come to continue their studies in Carolina. Another change is the more Chinese Americans, they realize how important it is for them to know or understand their culture, you know, where their, you know, the culture of the country where their parents come from. So we have the increasing number of these group, the Chinese Americans, they learn Chinese.
This is really interesting to me because some immigrant children, in all immigrants, but in I'm sure in the Chinese background as well, that although they speak Chinese at home, in their schools and with their friends, they push their background into the background, their ethnic background into the background. They want to be Americans. And then they learn how valuable the ability to speak a Mandarin is in terms of getting a job or getting a good job or being valued. And so they want to
catch up. To learn. Yes, right. So especially when I talk to some of the Chinese Americans, they say, wow, I feel so sorry for me. You know, when I was a kid, my parents asked me to learn Chinese. I didn't want to learn, you know. Until college, I realized how important it is because they see around them some Americans speak very good Chinese. They say, wow, so why not me? I should speak good Chinese. Mm. So they all come here and learn Chinese. So this is another change.
Well, right. I'm visiting with Zhou Yi. I call her Zhou Laoxue, which means Teacher Joe. She and I are talking about the exciting things that are happening in the teaching of Chinese, especially at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, and she and I will be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking? This is D.G. Martin, and we're talking about, the teaching of Mandarin or of Chinese at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, and I'm visiting with Zhou Yi, who is a senior lecturer there, and we've been talking about some of the things that she's been doing as we're entering sort of a time of a new school year. And Zhou Laoxue, I interrupted you, and we talked about sorting your job and sorting out the abilities of the many, now hundreds of students who want to take Chinese. Yeah. Once you get them sorted out, what happens to them?
So they will be placed into the right level. They started learning Chinese. And now we have, more advanced level students now. So like this is the first year for the fourth grade Chinese class. We have two classes.
In the fourth year?
Fourth year.
And so
right,
this would be, now these are Chinese majors.
Level.
Yeah, Chinese majors.
Major, and also some students, they're minor. Mm-hmm. They want to learn more.
So will they'll take several classes, I guess. Several Chinese classes.
Yes, right.
And what would, China, the Chinese culture is so ancient, so many years to cover in terms of literature or history or current events. I mean, what kinds of classes do they take?
For 400 language classes, they still do like language practice, but with some readings like reading newspapers, internet articles, they are building the reading proficiency and read authentic Chinese materials. So that's something they need to develop.
It's sort of a pragmatic use of the skills that they've learned in regular Chinese practice, putting them to work.
Yes, right. Something real. Yes, right.
Wow.
Okay. And also another change we have a lot of students, they went to China for study abroad program. So once they come back, they will be placed into higher level. They speak good Chinese. So each year we have, I wrote, you know, many recommendation letters for the students who wish to go to China to be immersed in the culture and the language. And also some of the students, they wish after their graduation, they will go to China and look for jobs. So that's a big change.
My impression, help me with this, is that that if you really want to be a master a language, and particularly Chinese, great to get prepared here. But if you really, for an American student without a background of speaking Chinese in the home, that you're going to have the immersion experience to seal it. That we can mm-hmm. prepare you for the immersion, and then we can help you enrich that immersion experience when you come back. But if you don't have that immersion experience, it's going to be really tough for you to. That's kind of an essential piece of it. Do you agree with that?
Yes, I do. I do. You know, that's what I suggest to students after 1 year learning.
A whole year?
Yeah, the whole year learning here. I suggest they will go to China for at least one summer.
Ah, okay. Okay,
right. For studies. Then when they come back, their Chinese is, you know, really, really good for, you know, because they are, when they study in China, their program is very intensive, every day, nothing, you know, just language and the culture. And also for some programs, they must sign language pledge. That means no English at all. And even, you know, between their friends, among their friends, American friends, they cannot speak, English. So they have to speak Chinese. That's the very good way when they are, you know, and also I should say the efficient.
The what? The
efficient. Right?
Efficient. Right? Yeah.
So when they in China, they take every opportunity to speak Chinese. And also for some of the programs, they pair the American student with a Chinese local student in one dorm. They live together. They speak Chinese
all the time.
Right.
Now, does the University of North Carolina Chapel Hill have special recommendations? Do you have places or immersion experiences that you recommend as being better than maybe
yes.
some of the others? What?
Right. We do. We have a CET program, the very, very good and high quality program. We say it's the center. Is based in Beijing, and also they have other centers like in Harbin, in Kunming. This program is well known for its high quality. They use the American, you know, communicative teaching methodology to teach students Chinese language, and it's very effective.
Now, are there some places that assert that they teach an immersion experience that aren't so good?
There are, you know, I cannot say they're not so good, but they're not that good as this
program. It's the CIT program.
CET program is very good program. And also we do have some other program approved by UNC Study Abroad Office. The program can be a language and a cultural program. It may not be language intensive program. It's mm-hmm. a little bit different. So the students learn the language not that intensively as this program. This is the
that would be. One. I'm just thinking mm-hmm. that a student might say, I understand that the speaking Chinese all the time would be better for me, but I just can't take it. I want to go learn a little bit of Chinese and have the cultural experience, but I don't want to be bound up for talking Chinese 24 hours a day. Is that?
But if they take the program, if they get into the program, they must sign the form.
No, but I mean on this other where it's culture and language, they have to sign the language pledge
too. No, they don't. So they learn, you know, they speak English with their friends.
Well, I don't want to press you to, but I'm just thinking that while that's a wonderful program,
yes,
it's not as efficient, nearly as efficient in really getting people over the hump from being Chinese students to being Chinese speakers and comfortable in the language. That it, if you're going to go, you ought to go in and spend full time on the Chinese.
Yeah, I say while after a year's learning here, then students feel more comfortable to be in this program. If without learning at all, they go and directly, maybe students feel very frustrated. Mm-hmm. So that's what I recommend. You know, suggest students they will learn 1 year here, then they go. They feel more comfortable.
Well,
and their Chinese could be very good when they come back. Okay. So these students, when they come back from study abroad program, and they will decide, wow, I want to major in Chinese because, you know, I love it. I really love China, you know.
And I can speak it and I can do well. I think I'm pretty sure I can do well.
And for the 300 level I'm teaching now, advanced Chinese, almost 2/3 of students, they've been to China.
Well.
You know. It was
you mean
not
been
that.
To China, not just for a visit, but been to China for a little bit of study and language
most of them
experience.
Yeah, for study. Some of them, they travel, you know, in China. So they had experience. They know what it's about. So when we talk in Chinese in class, we can share experience in Chinese, you know. It's a lot of fun now to teach the advanced levels Chinese students. So I cannot imagine, you know, 10 years ago for advanced level students, they didn't have such experience. Well, that's a great for, you know, students.
I'm visiting with Zhou Yi, who is the senior lecturer in Chinese at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. She and I will be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. My guest is Zhou Yi. She is my Zhou Lao Shi, teacher of Chinese. And I want to talk about what's on your mind, but we've talked about the differences in your students and their capabilities and the numbers that you have. Are you teaching the same way that you taught 10 years ago? Are there things that you've learned about how to teach a difficult language to your students?
When I
would just
in
have to say you were pretty good. You were very good 10 years ago.
When I was in graduate school, I learned, you know, lots of teaching methodology, but these methods and also, you know, keep changing because of the different needs of students, different backgrounds. So diversity in students, right?
Well, let me just I'll mention one or two things that to suggest to you, and then if you want to comment on them, you can. But one of the things when 10 years ago, when you were teaching Chinese writing, it wouldn't make a big difference to people who are listening to us because the Chinese characters are gibberish to those who haven't learned it. But it was a whole lot more complicated because you were teaching what we'd call, I guess, the old style of Chinese characters. Then about 5 or 6, 7 years ago, University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill switched from traditional characters to modern characters.
Yeah,
well,
to simplify.
Was there a story there? Why did you do that?
Yeah, because of China's influence, in the world, the simplified character in a version is taught in China. We have the students. They go to China for study abroad program, meaning they are in mainland China. So that's why we decide to teach simplified version. And also we'll keep the same pace with other universities. In most American universities, the simplified versions are taught. So I mean, while when students go to China for study abroad program, they will be together, you know, study Chinese with other students from other universities. So we must keep the same pace.
I think the case for teaching simplified characters is overwhelming. But the question is, why did it take your department so long to make the change?
To make the change?
Yeah. Why were we? Was it just because older teachers learned the old characters and they wanted to teach that, or what was? Or just inertia?
Yeah, I thought, well, because the change, you know, because of the influence of China and also the change all in Chinese program in across the universities. Mm-hmm. So because, you know, each year we have annual conferences, then we, you know, the instructors, Chinese instructors will talk about, you know, what's going on in the field.
I'm trying to trick you. And you're just too diplomatic to get into this. But I mean, you know, I'm interested in politics, and so I'm interested in the politics within the department, but also the interest in the politics of our country. And so there are two sides. For those of you who are listening, just bear with us a little bit, because this might be a little bit of inside politics. Mm-hmm. But in Taiwan, Taiwan still or has for a long time used the traditional characters, which are a little bit more complicated. They're richer. Mm-hmm. They are arguably closer to what, I mean, certainly closer to what the Chinese language had been for many, many years, and they haven't changed. In mainland China, the simplification has been imposed, you know, in authoritarian style on everyone. And of course, more than a billion people are using that form. But the teachers at Chapel Hill had learned the old characters and were, well, and that we were more in line with Taiwan than we were politically than we were with mainland China. It was so. There was a little bit of politics about choosing to keep with the old characters.
I don't think it's related to any politics. I don't think so.
All right.
Yeah, we'll keep with the change.
That it's just this is what the trend is across the country. We're now using the characters that if our students go to China or try to participate in modern world, they better know the simplified characters.
Right. And right. Also the students from middle school and high schools, it's easier for them to learn.
So I'm going to get off my horse about trying to push you into giving a political speech. Uh-huh. You're just not going there. What are the so that's one change
in in students.
No, in change in terms of what you're teaching.
Yes. Right.
What else? What other changes have there been in terms of
teaching? I mean,
yeah, in teaching or in the content of the curriculum, or I can't believe that over the 10 or 15 year period we haven't learned a few better ways to teach teach a very difficult language.
Yeah.
You can think about that for a little bit.
Okay. So for the teaching methodology, you know, I keep looking for new ways to make it fun to attract more students. The change is the more technology. I use blogging.
Oh, you do now?
So like a school website, set up the topics and students will talk about in Chinese or, you know, about the movie.
You'll introduce a topic.
Yeah, maybe a song, a Chinese song, anything. Then students will look at it, will watch. Then they will give them feedback. And not only feedback on the movie or the feedback on the song, but also they will respond to each other just like they do their social media.
So was this something that you had to learn about blogging, and was that
your husband
teach you this how to do all of the social media stuff? He's a computer guy. Or did you learn from your students?
Not really. From my students, you know, they added me to the Facebook.
Wow. And so that works as a teaching vehicle now?
Yeah. I don't use much Facebook as a teaching because, you know, and also we must be very cautious about what blogging students will use. So we use a school website, but it still can be publicly seen by the people. And I warn them, something not proper, you cannot post. But students really, really love it.
That's really exciting to me.
Yeah.
It brings up another question that I think a lot of our listeners would have and that I had, and that is, you've got thousands of Chinese characters, and on our keyboard, our computer keyboards, we've only got, 30 or 40 buttons to press. So how, if you're communicating in Chinese with these characters, can you do that with how do you do that? How does that work?
So we do it with pronunciation, like pinyin. We use a pinyin that's Roman letter, right? The Roman letters and to key in and...
So there's a way to convert a character into a two or three.
Yeah, one character has the syllable like consonant and vowels. Then students can choose which word they will use.
So I'll type in sure, S-H-I, and the character for sure will appear.
Yeah.
Except that there are 20 sures.
Yeah, 20, yes, students
there are 20
will
characters.
For
you, then you have to choose the character. But can you go pretty fast? Can you type pretty
fast? Yeah, very fast. In fact, students prefer to type and to handwriting now.
That's interesting too, so that they can manage to get the Chinese characters on the screen and on their paper, and they can print them out without handwriting them. So how do you push them to write the characters these days?
For the homework, they need to handwrite, because I emphasize for their final exam, they must handwrite. For their test, they must handwrite. So for the homework, I require them handwrite. But for social media and blogging,
it's okay
because it's another technique, and students will learn, must learn how to type. But we do not introduce that very early, like for the first year students, because it's so easy. They love it. They don't want to handwrite. So students will start to type when they are in the second year.
Well, I'm visiting with Zhou Lao Shur. Lao Shur means teacher in Chinese, and we're learning a little bit about the challenges of and the opportunities and excitement of teaching students at the University of North Carolina Chapel Hill. She and I'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. I'm visiting with Zhou Yi, who teaches Chinese at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. And in fact, she is also my Lao Shur. She doesn't brag about that because my Mandarin is not too good. But we've been talking about the excitement that she has in teaching Chinese to Carolina students. I wondered, what is it? Talk to me about how you see China when you go back to visit, and how do you see our country with the eyes of someone who's had the opportunity to see both cultures? Are there things that you talk about?
Yeah. Again, about the changes every year when
either or just when you go back home, what do you notice? And then when you come back here, what do you notice?
So when I go back to China, I notice the changes every year. Of the places, even my hometown, Tianjin, some of the streets, I cannot recognize what, these streets are. So one big change in China is more internationalized, more globalized, more Americanized.
Oh, really? More Americanized?
Right. So when I come back to Chapel Hill and to North Carolina, and we do shopping, everyone knows, wow, the products made in China. But when I go back to China, I can see American brands everywhere, like fast food restaurants and the daily, products like shampoo and everything that's American brand.
So you go back home to visit China, and there is too much of America there too.
Yes, right. It's amazing, and In addition to these something you can see, and also medium, like TV shows, they are very Americanized. They have the TV shows like Voice, like American Idol, they call it Chinese, Idol. And they have the TV show like Dancing with the Stars. That's American, So I'm so surprised and amazed to see, China is so globalized. It seems while the world is becoming smaller. Especially in the big cities like Shanghai and Beijing, it's not much big difference.
This is incredible. So you go back to China and it's like going to Milwaukee. You're going to another American town.
Yeah, Shanghai is just like New York. Skyscrapers everywhere.
It's clear that you don't focus on this when you go back home to China, but there is still a vast political difference in terms of the attitudes of how we govern and all of this stuff. But I hear you saying that doesn't make too much difference on the ground. I mean, in daily life, it's more and more just the same.
Yeah,
is that,
the
are
same.
You saying that?
Yeah, the same. But now the food. The food is different.
Now talk about the food. Oh, this is interesting. So is it possible? Well, do you prefer Chinese food? Do you love Chinese food?
Absolutely. Definitely I like authentic Chinese food, Americanized Chinese food.
So to get real Chinese food, do you have to go to China now? Can you get this real Chinese food anywhere?
We can get some authentic Chinese food here in Chapel Hill and in Cary, in some Chinese restaurants. Yes,
but most of the Chinese restaurants I know they have to be Americanized in order to attract Americans.
So they have a separate menus.
So if a Chinese person goes to a restaurant, if I go to a restaurant, I'll get the menu for Americans and I'll get Americanized Chinese food.
Right.
If you go, you wink at the waiter and say in Chinese, I want real Chinese. Or how do you say, what do you say to them? Or do you have to say anything?
I would say, do you have another menu for Chinese?
Uh-huh.
And some restaurants, they will. But some other restaurants, they have, some kind of, Chinese food, the food dishes they recommend. This is something authentic
that you
can order.
Authentic.
Right.
Well, that's easy for you. But if I would go, they're going to give me the Americanized version. And how would I get an authentic Chinese dish? And what kind of authentic kind of Chinese dish would you recommend that I wouldn't see on the American Chinese menu?
Chinese 饺子, the 麻婆豆腐. It's
tofu
with garlic sauce, but it's not real garlic sauce for Americans. That's something real Chinese.
And so what do you do at home? Do you get frozen food, American frozen food?
Not frozen food. I cook Chinese food and sometimes, easy and just American food like salad. Right? It's much easier.
You have a daughter who grew up now in this area and went to school at Chapel Hill. And how does she view life or view the world differently from you? Does she still hold to her Chinese roots, or is she totally Americanized?
She's very open. She's very open to all kinds of food, not only American food, international food. And so each time she's working in DC now, each time we go and visit her, she will take us, me and my husband, and go to a restaurant, like Indian restaurant.
Something entirely different.
That's right.
Listen,
entirely different.
I've got so many. Thank you for coming and visiting with me and sharing the excitement that you bring to the classroom with our listeners. Zhou Yi, Chinese teacher at Chapel Hill, we're so lucky to have you here.
Thank you so much.
Thanks to all y'all for listening. This is DG Martin, Who's Talking? I'll be back here before you know it.